Welcome to the Chirpin' Birds podcast. We are back from our 2.5 week break. I think our last recording was on the 24th of January, something like that. We are back. We have we both have a couple life updates, which have delayed us in recording a bit, but we'll get into that. Super Bowl 58 is over and done with. The Chiefs have repeated. Jason Kelce was there, along with other notable people. I guess I'll just leave it at that. It's not necessarily Eagles relevant. Hassan Reddick has permission, to seek a trade. Eagles, and just to orient where we were on the last podcast, Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio are offensive and defensive coordinators. There are sirens going on here where I am in LA. Let's get into it. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good. But, you know, the big news, Kellen Moore, yeah, not so much big news anymore. There's bigger news on this podcast. I'm doing good. I have a sneaky suspicion that you're doing a lot better. And that is because somebody got engaged.
That is true.
Congratulations.
I am now
to you and Alyssa.
Thank you. We got engaged over the weekend.
That's what those sirens are for. They heard the word is spreading.
And they're and the air horns, you can't tell, but they're going off, and there's fireworks. There's the whole deal. We got engaged. It was a very romantic evening. We celebrated with friends. We watched the Super Bowl. It was a pretty momentous weekend, and you know, someone got a ring that is an Eagles fan, and that is Alyssa. And no other Eagles did, but Fletcher Cox did very hilariously troll Debo Samuel on Instagram about having a ring and Debo not. But the big ring of the weekend is the one that I gave to Alyssa. Now I will be a married man and join my podcast co-host as being a married man. So we're a married podcast.
Yeah.
Pro marriage podcast, I suppose.
Yeah, what an exciting time. This is actually what the podcast is about. It's an emergency podcast. Ian and Alyssa are engaged. And
it's an emergency podcast that we scheduled before the engagement.
We actually schedule around Ian's engagement. That's right.
Yep. Now I know the meaning of, I'm sorry, I can't come to that. I have a prior engagement.
There you go. Now, a little behind the scenes here. I'm sure everybody wants to know, how long was this ring in your pocket? Was it, or did you have a specific event in mind? Because I think there's two schools of thought on this, and one of which is you keep the ring in a secret spot and you occasionally check on it to make sure it's okay, but otherwise you leave it out of sight. And then the other school of thought is once you're ready, you're kind of carrying that bad boy for when the moment strikes. So I'm curious, what was the situation for you?
Well, I've had it since mid to late December. I am in the camp of putting it in a safe place and checking on it once in a while. The engagement plan was very thought out and detailed and required multiple personnel to execute. It was not a when the moment's right, carry it around type situation. Mm. I wanted to have a plan. And so we did it at a sentimental location where one of our first dates was. I had friends hide behind trees and bushes to record the proposal. It was really a production, and it took multiple people to execute in multiple ways, kind of like a football team, huh? You know,
Sounds like there's a lot of group chats
and
involved here.
yeah, there were a couple group chats. There were a few Eagles references in the group chats when they were in position, ready for us to get over there. I get a text that says the Eagles are in a great position to win next year, so that's how I knew they were in position. I of course replied, Kellen Moore will be bringing his own staff momentarily in about 20 minutes,
Now, why were you
and
coding all this? Because I'm assuming you're very careful not to
well.
include Alyssa in these messages. This makes it sound
Well,
like
they're not
Alyssa was
in.
in the
She's
group
not in the
chat.
group chat. She's not in the group chat, but she might see my phone. You never know. You know, sometimes, force of habit. When we got in the car, I could put my phone on the phone holder there, and a text could pop up. You never know. Just to be extra careful. So.
Okay, that
That's
adds up.
kind of how we went into it. I wasn't a I'm not a really a, I'm more of a planner, you know. I want to execute a memorable, historic, I guess, you know, if you go off the cuff, it's still memorable, but I wanted to have a detailed, executable plan that I did to perfection, pretty much.
Nice. Well, it sounds
I had a
like
speech.
very nice. Sounds like everything was just about perfect. So well done.
It worked out exactly as his plan, so thank you.
Bravo. Now, I'll give you the option if you want to disclose the hiding spot of the ring. And I also, you can reserve the right to keep that to yourself for
Well,
future
I mean, it's
use.
out in the open now, so it's I had a Goldenberg's peanut chews tin. And the ring was in the tin under some papers that I put on top of it in this tin, and the tin went into our guest room closet deep in the back where Alyssa does not often go.
All right, Alyssa,
And
if you're
you
listening
know
9 minutes in, next time you're looking for something very important, you know just where to pick. Look for the Goldenberg tin can.
Yeah, well, I don't even know that she knows what peanut chews are, but that's fine. But there were, you know, she was kind of like looking for clues. So, you know, when I was she has a nice camera, which is the camera we used. So when I asked her where it was, she said she would look in the closet, and I said, no, there's no need. I'll look. So.
Don't look in the
She
closet. I got
suspected
it.
then, and then a week prior, you know, we did a run through at the park where I proposed.
Wow, a dress rehearsal for the proposal.
Yeah, 'cause we had to go at the right time, about 15, 20 minutes after sunset. Had to make sure it was dark enough that people weren't probably going to be around, but light enough that the camera could pick up, the shot.
Wow.
And of course, the second we get there, I get a call from her. And so I say, you know, can I call you back? And that's not a usual exchange when she calls me. So. She thought something was up, so of course she goes on Find My Friends and sees I'm in this park, and she knows the meaning of that location. So she had her suspicions, I'm sure, and you know, she's very, very crafty and very smart, and you know, there was no way she was gonna find out the details of how I was gonna do it. I purchased little battery candles that flicker. You know, those were all around this gazebo there. It was recorded. There was I got a single red rose, so I could say, "Will you accept this rose?" After, you know, the serious bit. So there was there were layers to it that she couldn't have guessed, but she suspected that it was going to happen. If not this weekend, we're going to Arizona next weekend for a little getaway trip. So, you know, she's not dumb. She's smart. She knows what's going on. So it was every element that could have been a surprise was, and it didn't take away from anything. It was perfectly executed.
Nice.
And she couldn't have been happier. I got no notes whatsoever.
Well, that's awesome.
Although I did learn this, and I'm curious if you knew this. Fiance, and this is, you know,
French.
Very binary. It's very binary, but fiance with one E is the man, and fiance with two E's is the woman.
That's correct.
Or the male female. I did not know that. I thought it was one word, and that was that.
Now, do you know how to pronounce them?
Fiance and fiance.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, well, you know, you went through this, so you know exactly what
yeah, no, it's just the spelling. The process. It's just the spelling difference. There's no actual verbal difference.
Right. Okay. Right. That's why I didn't know. Right. Everyone's gonna write in, and this is a relationships, romance and relationships podcast now. So send in your relationship advice questions and we'll answer.
We'll try.
All right. And you had a bit of news moving back to the East Coast, Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
A bit later for you.
Yeah. That is one of the few things that I'll miss, moving back home. It's going to take some getting used to. I thought the central time zone was like the Goldilocks, you know, you're not too far behind, but you also have that, like, that 1 hour is like beautiful for the case of late night sports. Like, it is such a game changer. But yeah, Carly and I, my wife, we both moved back home to the Philadelphia area. We were in Texas for a few years. Carly, 2 years longer than myself. So we had a nice little stint out in Texas, but it is a nice little homecoming for us. I did not realize how much work it was to pack, move, and unpack. And I say that yep. without any major snafus involved with the actual process. Now, there were some hiccups outside of that, like we both got sick, there was an injury, so that there were a few things outside of the literal move that kind of hampered our move, but we're now mostly unpacked, happy, and getting used to our new place. And you know, it's also been tough on Fig, our cat. For anybody who has a cat, you'll know how sensitive and emotional they are, much more so than dogs when it comes to change in their environment. So I know it's been toughest on her, but we're all getting back to our new routine here, and it's nice to be back home. It's nice to be back in the area where the teams I root for are from. Nice to be back to both in the area of our respective families. So nice to be back.
One plus of you moving back is you'll be able to go down to the NovaCare and get some eyewitness intel for the podcast. So
yeah, we'll have some training camp. Jumping.
Yeah,
on top
so
of...
tweet at us questions, and he'll ask Sirianni and Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio.
Yeah, we'll see if Chirpa can get credentialed.
Yeah, we should. It's about time. This is our fourth season.
Yeah, coming into it. We came in
Coming
with
into
Nick
it, yeah. So
Sirianni, right?
we came in with
No, Doug
Nick
Peterson.
and Jalen.
Oh, did we? Now I'm a little
Jalen.
confused. Maybe it's our third season. Because it's Nick's.
No, I we
No, not
no,
you.
we
First time
we
I said it was accurate. Coming into our fourth season.
Jalen's yeah. It's Jalen's starting seasons. So he's had three seasons where he's been the starter.
Correct. Year four, here we
So
come.
that the Jalen era is when we began the podcast. So
On.
little history there. So that's where we're both at, and outside of playoff football and some coaching hires, not a ton of Eagles news. So let's get into the you want to talk the Super Bowl
Yeah,
first?
let's talk Super Bowl because that's the freshest thing. If you're listening to this, I'm gonna put money on you being marginally more enthused with the outcome of that game. I would say most Eagles fans have an intense disliking for the 49ers organization as of late. I thought the game was an evenly matched one, but Patrick Mahomes, I mean, we're fortunate to watch it. Like, I know we did get to watch a lot of Tom Brady, but like to see Mahomes accomplish so much so relatively soon in his career is, I'm not gonna say it's like it's really special, and I don't find him to be like an easy athlete to root for, because frankly, I find him to be a little irritating to watch, considering how often he's like begging for calls. He's got some like LeBron to his game in that way, where it's like, all right, man, you're so good. Like, if you like reeled that back like 25%, I don't know if the outcome would really change, but I mean, what can you say other than like he's certainly well on his way to being the best player ever. I don't think that's crazy to say. I know that's still firmly Tom Brady, but like if I was Tom, I would.
I mean, he's halfway to Tom Brady now.
Yeah. Now, Andy
He just
Reid, I
tied
mean,
eight Troy Aikman.
I think we can all
Yeah, I
find it
mean,
in our hearts to still root for Andy Reid, even if it's a little bit complicated. Give me your takeaways from last night.
it was sort of the perfect storm of being able to root for the Chiefs guilt-free. I strongly dislike the 49ers. Bosa's already complaining about the hotel and taking shots at the Philly construction for working in the morning before the NFC Championship game. So many of their players whine and make excuses and this and that, and it's really annoying. They, I think, had probably a worse outcome than the Eagles last year, just because of how dominant they were in the first half defensively, and the offense was playing well, even though they weren't scoring necessarily. They were 3 for 12 on third down, I think, but it just kind of felt like the 49ers were doing what they wanted and were in control of the game. The Eagles were in a similar spot last year in the first half, and then the second half was just totally it was kind of similar as the Super Bowl last year, but the fact that the 49ers went up, I think twice, and then gave up. They had a number of leads that they gave up. The Eagles gave up one lead and then had to fight back to tie it and then went down again. So I'd say that the Niners loss was probably worse than the Eagles loss, but anyway, you know, the Travis and Taylor stuff, you know, I'm a fan of both of them. I'm not obsessed with them. I don't need every single detail of their relationship, and I don't need to see Taylor Swift every 5 seconds on screen, although I'm seeing circulating around social media she was on screen for a total of 54 seconds on the broadcast. So, you know, I thought they did a good job not making it all about that and focusing on the game. The SpongeBob broadcast seemed really fun. I was watching some highlights of that. The Chiefs and Mahomes and Andy, like, they had the most incredible run. They had all these road games.
Yeah.
They had similar schedule. Right. They had a similar schedule difficulty with rest and, you know, first place schedule, obviously, and all these things that the Eagles had to deal with. And it definitely got to them, but they overcame it. It's sort of a, you know, they're an AFC team, so it's easier to swallow them winning a lot. I mean, I know the Patriots were an AFC team, but that's sort of like, I think it's a little different. But I don't know. It was just easy to tip your hat to the greatness of this Chiefs team. And just watch, you know, one of the greatest and probably future greatest of all time players playing in, you know, all Super Bowls are historic, but this felt like witnessing a piece of history on a, you know, all time story. So it just felt kind of, you know, it felt a little more momentous and important and like says it was more of a significant Super Bowl because of how they won and that they won and all these things. I don't know. It was an entertaining second half. A lot of field goals, but the overtime was pretty wild because they had the ball. I think it was like first and goal, the Chiefs did, with 50-some seconds left, and they just let the clock run, and they only gave themselves one play, basically, to win it. They could have called timeout, kicked a field goal, and went into the second overtime, I'm pretty sure, but no one, the broadcast wasn't saying anything, and the clock just kept ticking and ticking, and I thought that they should have given themselves a couple shots at the end zone, but I guess they didn't want to give the 49ers the ball back with like 30 seconds, something like that. So they really took a big risk there and ran the same exact play that worked against the Eagles.
Right.
The corn dog, and ended up winning the Super Bowl, and it felt sort of inevitable at that point. You know, it was sort of a wide open play, and the Chiefs kind of celebrated like they weren't surprised. It really did feel like a Super Bowl win for a team that expects to win, like, you know, four or five of them.
Right.
And they were just like, yeah, we won again this year, and now we have to win next year, and that kind of thing. And it, as opposed to Doug saying this is the new norm, it felt like they actually are going to do that. So,
right. Well, what's interesting about the...
It was easy to cheer for them, I think, just because of the alternative of Purdy winning a ring and Jalen not having one and hating the 49ers and right. all that stuff.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is the Chiefs had a tough year. Like, it was not a pretty season for them. In fact, I think the Eagles and the Chiefs both, I forget the stat exactly, but it was like, I think they both hit their over-under win total by a game and a half, so it's not like they, or I could be getting that wrong. Essentially, like, they didn't really overperform expectations. They were kind of, like, right around what the market was expecting. And, I mean, there was points in the season where there was, like, a lot of frustration with the Chiefs. And I think a lot of that actually came at the hands of the Eagles when they beat the Chiefs in Kansas City. So, I mean, they really caught their win at the right time. Their playoff run, and it was a special one. It's not easy to win the Super Bowl the year after you won the Super Bowl, let alone a year after you had a Super Bowl appearance or you had a playoff run. So we know now, twice after the Eagles have had a Super Bowl appearance, the year after, like, there's some like mileage on the team, both physically and mentally and emotionally. Like, those expectations, like, they seem so superfluous or like not tangible, but like we have good evidence to show that there is some sort of build-up effect. And for the Chiefs to go out and do it back-to-back years and in the second year have so much to overcome, like, they by no means were they a like juggernaut. Like, their offense was kind of a mess this year. Now their defense is really good, and I think that's ultimately what helped buoy this team and keep them, you know, in the playoffs and ultimately win the Super Bowl against a really good 49ers team. So yeah, I think on one level it's like, you know, whoever the 49ers are up against, like, I'm their new biggest fan. But on the other hand, I think there is there's a lot to admire and be jealous of, from the coach to the quarterback to the sustained success they've had under him. So hopefully that's, we can put a pin in in a lot of that complimentary talk about the Chiefs, because the season is over. They have their ring. They are now the twice defending champions. The Eagles lost to them last year, so now it's time to get back to there for the Eagles.
Yeah. I mean, they're in a league of their own, and with the Brady Manning years, you know, the Colts only won the 1 year, I suppose, and also Peyton with the Broncos, but it just kind of feels like there's no other team in the league that can really expect to beat the Chiefs or really give them issues. The only team to beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl was Brady. So I don't know. It's tough to have. It's tough to think about beating the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I mean, this was the hardest schedule, I think, ever. Like, playoff, you know, path to the Super Bowl ever that the Chiefs just accomplished. And yes, if that extra point was not blocked, then they probably would have lost or could have lost. That was a massive play because, you know, obviously the game's not tied if that goes through. So there was some luck with it, but the Eagles, I think, can reasonably hope to get to the Super Bowl, but I think to win the Super Bowl is that much harder just because they're playing a all-time historic quarterback and all-time historic head coach.
Yeah.
And they've solidified themselves as as that like Brady Belichick level in my mind. So
yeah, I mean, they're getting, certainly on that trajectory.
It doesn't make me any more confident in playing them in the playoffs or in anyone playing, you know, through the AFC playoffs. I still will take the Chiefs over any other team, mm-hmm. but it will be interesting to see how that dynasty continues. But
now on the other hand, go ahead.
I also don't know about Mahomes' contract and how that's going to affect the team moving forward either. So, I mean, it seems to not matter.
Yeah.
But those are sort of the nitpicky, I'm like going for crumbs on nitpicking this team. But
right. Now, on the other hand,
It's hard to be so optimistic about the Eagles' chances when this is what waits for them in the Super Bowl should they get that far.
Yeah. Now, I feel like I don't see it as that, like, impossible. Like, I don't see them as, like, the prime Steph Curry Warriors where there's, like, a mathematical calculation that you can't overcome. Like, I do think they're a very talented...
Yeah, I mean, they could have lost the game, but... The 49ers also played it safe. They played to hold the lead. The offense completely stalled in the second half. And, you know, Purdy didn't make plays. And by that, it was, you know, three plays he didn't make. It wasn't the whole game. I thought he played really well. Yeah, I thought both teams played really well.
I don't think there was any, like...
But big. It comes down to like 2-3 plays and Purdy didn't make them and Mahomes did. So mm-hmm. when you're that evenly matched coming down to those things, it's tough to be critical about being perfect, but Mahomes threw one or two interceptions, and they still overcame it. So it was not a clean, dominant game by any means, but from the Chiefs, but they found a way to win, and they've done that consistently over year after year after year, where the Eagles did blew teams out for a year and then made one or too many mistakes in the Super Bowl and just lost a really good game, and then the following year completely fell apart. So, you know, I would be completely floored if the Chiefs ever did what the Eagles did last year. And I think from that perspective, you know, it's tough to compare and that kind of thing. Like the Chiefs lost to Brady and then I don't think they made it back the following year. And That was Rams Bengals, right. And then the following year they made it back.
Yeah, one quick note on the the overtime rule. I think I'm a little confused as to why this is like. I think it's embarrassing that the 49ers were not prepared for that possibility, or like that
wasn't totally part of
their decision considerations. And it, you know, the Chiefs, apparently they were talking about this like in training camp and like what the plan would be in the playoffs or ultimately the Super Bowl. Now it comes down to like game theory, whether or not, like, I don't really know what the circumstances or the philosophy would be knowing that rule and saying, give me or give, like, or we want to receive. Because unless you just want to come out and, like, if you want to be, like, the aggressive team who, like, sets the tone in overtime, like, you, more often than not, would want to know what you need to do to win, rather than, you know, kind of see what your offense can do, hope for a touchdown, but at least get a field goal, knowing that the best thing you could do is either get a turnover, get a stop, or hold the other team to the same outcome, and then you, the next possession, it's sudden death. But it's not like that decision had a determined outcome on the 49ers not scoring a touchdown and then proceeding to give up a touchdown. Like, I guess I'm just a little confused why their players, A, admitted not knowing it, and then B, admitting it almost as if there was some disservice to their performance because of it. It's like, well, I mean, the rule and the decision.
Yeah, they kicked a field goal, and in the regular season rules, that wouldn't end the game either.
I know.
Are they saying that it was Juszczyk and who else? So the offensive players, it's like, so the defense isn't playing as hard because Eric they Armstead think they can let up a. Oh, yeah, yeah. The implication is the defense plays less. The defense plays less hard because they think they're getting the ball back. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think it's just like, it's like a headline more than it is anything actually tangible. Like,
right.
I don't know.
But it is pretty damning that.
No, it's embarrassing. Players, like, it just reeks of being unprepared and not ready for the biggest game of your life, probably. Like, to not, like, I don't know what it actually determines other than your, like, how you go about overtime. Like, I'm not dismissing that, but, like, your on-field performance shouldn't really be dictated by how the scoring or possessions work. Like, I feel like people are glossing over the 49ers failing to score a touchdown on their opening drive, and in the next drive, failing to stop the Chiefs at all.
Right.
Now, last thing on the Super Bowl, unless you have anything else. I did see Tony Romo get some criticism for his call on the very end of overtime on that touchdown pass from Mahomes to...
talking about, I don't know what he was talking about.
He was talking about, like, you know, the Chiefs here, like, you'd think that they should be in a rush, but they're not, and that's because, you know, they have their timeouts, but the clock is running. The clock wouldn't expire. It would go to zero, or better put, the game wouldn't end. The clock would expire, but it would go into the next quarter of overtime. So it's not like they need to
beat zero. Oh, and they would keep the ball.
It's the possession. If they got the touchdown, like it did, the game's over. If they kicked a field goal before that, it would be the 49ers getting the ball and moving on to the second quarter. So pretty much what he was trying to communicate, and I thought he did a good job. It probably just wasn't the best timing. It was just that, you know, the clock right now, it's not like real overtime. The game's not about to be over. It's
right.
The possessions and the outcomes.
Yeah, I guess I assumed that there was going to be another, like, coin toss or something, but that wouldn't make any sense. Yeah, so it's basically like the end of the first quarter or the third
exactly.
quarter. Exactly. Okay, well, that makes sense.
So, like, very but important. But they scored just, the like, touchdown. So. Kind of rough timing, I guess. But...
Yeah, and the touchdown to sort of.
Like, I don't know. Tony Romo's not a great announcer. I feel like he's kind of had his. He had a very quick prime in the booth. But
his prime, I think, was the way that he is enthusiastic and loves talking about football, and you know he loves the job. And most broadcasters weren't like that. He was very animated.
And well, what's funny is
now
like,
I think
like
he's just kind of
I feel like
whatever.
The new rub on him is that he's actually not, like, he's loud and he's animated, but I think the dig on him is like, well, I guess there's a few now, but like, in my opinion, or at least what I see or hear, is like, they don't feel like his heart's in it as much. Like, and I think when he first got in, I was like, wow, like, this guy is like bursting through the screen. He still has a love for this game, and now it's like, I think he's a little bit over the job. But
or he was directed to tone it down.
Yeah. Well, I thought he did a fine job. Like I said, I don't think he's great, but
yeah,
I think
I'm
it's
not
kind
complaining
of
about.
Harsh to needle him on the very end call. Although, like, I guess, you know, when you're a fan, that's like one of the most joyous parts of your life. Like, it's kind of like an imprinted moment. So I guess there's like a lot riding on that, like, 5 seconds right there. So I guess with the importance comes a lot of scrutiny. So I guess that's the other side of that coin.
You want to talk some Eagles?
Yeah, I suppose we should sooner or later.
Yeah. So Eagles hire Kellen Moore as their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, this is old news, but it's kind of a big deal.
I know, yeah. I think he... My first reaction, he didn't really make me too excited, but he did... I did feel relieved. Like, he has run offenses, he's called plays for a number of seasons, he's called plays for top offensive or top offenses in seasons multiple times. The floor of the offense, I think, is raised with Kellen Moore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, you know, that there's some knocks on him. He doesn't run the ball, that kind of thing. I'm not sure what to really think about that. I don't know the nitty-gritty of critiquing him or not, but it does make me confident that the Eagles or Nick will be open to handing the keys to him, and it's his offense, and they use, you know, concepts, and that Nick's concepts, but it's Kellen's offense, similar to Vic Fangio on defense. So I'm very excited and interested to see what the offense looks like next year. I really hope he'll be good for Jalen, and I think I'd describe how I feel about the hiring as content. I'm sort of like, okay, we got a veteran guy. I don't have to really worry that much. I can go back to complaining about, you know, execution or this play or that play, but I don't need to worry about, can this guy even call plays in the league? That kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say I'm feeling similar. I love that we're bringing in an experienced play caller. He's been calling plays for 5 years now. I remember when he was promoted to the Cowboys offensive coordinator position. That was in 2019. And I was like, okay. And then he did that for a few years. And I was like, okay, like, he's done a pretty good job with Dak. The Cowboys offense has been pretty good for a while now. And I remember kind of hoping that he would be hired away from the Cowboys, because I was like, all right, like, they hire McCarthy. I think there was a chance that Kellen could have been promoted, and he was certainly a head coach candidate. In fact, the Eagles interviewed him on their way to hiring Nick Sirianni, so I think that connection's there. Like, the Eagles at least had a conversation about hiring him as their head coach a few years ago. So He certainly has the pedigree. He has the Play Kwong experience. Now, I think the past year kind of poo-pooed his reputation a little bit. Now, when the Cowboys mutually parted ways with Kellen, or I should say, Kellen and the Cowboys mutually parted ways, and he went to the Chargers, I was like, that kind of feels like a win for the Eagles. Like, Kellen Moore's gone, Mike McCarthy has an elevated hand in their offense, and that actually ended up being a positive thing for the Cowboys. Now, I don't think that directly means that Kellen Moore was holding back the Cowboys offense. I do think, you know, Mike McCarthy, he did a good job this past year. He really did help Dak and unlock the offense. And Kellen Moore didn't have a great one-year stint with the Chargers. I think a lot of that was because of health and injuries on the Chargers offense between Mike Williams, Justin Herbert, the quarterback. So, like, I don't think it's as clean as Mike McCarthy good, Kellen Moore bad, but the evidence, you could certainly try to combine those points of evidence to reach that conclusion. But that's all to say that I think Kellen Moore was probably the best the Eagles could do to bring in a new ideas guy and a play caller short of the Eagles firing Nick Sirianni and opening up their head coach spot for, like, young offensive minds like Ben Johnson. So I do think they kind of, like, threaded the needle of getting an experienced play caller who brings certainly a new sense of offense to their scheme. I don't know we could have gotten a better outcome short of it being a head coaching vacancy. So I get feeling content, but I also think, like, thinking league-wide here, I'm not sure there was a better option given the circumstances here. Like, I don't know if there was, like, a better name that even floated out there, let alone was hired for this spot. It's typically reserved for, you know, the Brian Johnson types, like, not ready for a head coach spot, but, like, we see that that could be a likely destination down the road if things went well. So I like Moore. You get the experience. I think he still has some shine on him. He's done a lot with Dak, so I think he'll be a good mind, a good coach to kind of get Jalen back to where he was in 2023. And I don't know how, like, in our last recording, we were talking about the extent to which we think Nick Sirianni will have a driving part of the Eagles offense. I think the hiring of Kellen Moore kind of confirms where I was feeling. I don't know if it's moved you at all, but this is bringing in an offensive coordinator who's held the job for since 2019. Now at two different teams, but he's a guy who's played, or he's called plays. So I mean, he's not coming in here like from college. He's not an ascending quarterback coach. Like, this is a guy who's called for play. You know, he's had big time quarterbacks. He's led good offenses. So to me, it kind of feels like it's confirming my earlier suspicion of Nick kind of taking a step back on this Eagles offense. How about you?
I kind of like the Nick as head coach, he is head coach, as the CEO type head coach, like the Dan Campbell, the John Harbaugh. I think it's interesting. I'm curious to see if it'll work. I think he was brought in as a personality or as a culture setter, and I've said this before, so I'm not upset that he's like, I think it's hard to know for sure if he's been sort of shoved aside or if he took the deal that Doug didn't take, or if this is more of a, it wasn't working with the former coordinator, so they're looking to change it up or this or that. I'm not. I think they needed the new idea guy. I don't really. I'm not upset that Nick didn't get fired. Like I'm not coming from the perspective of them. What does he even do? I think there are coaches that, are the CEO types that do lead the team and do manage things. I mean, being the head coach doesn't, it involves a lot of things that aren't calling plays. Like I don't think he's doing nothing. So I think he's good for the team. Players defend him. I don't know if you want to talk about Britton Covey's quotes, but it seemed like it was just kind of a season where they sort of fell apart, and for emotional, non-tangible reasons, it turned out to be the way that it was, and it's a little confusing if all these players defend Nick, but the coach lost the locker room. So I think there was a flukiness to what happened that he didn't necessarily deserve to be fired for it. And I think he should have a shorter leash because I think he earned the chance. I think he earned the right to keep his job based on the success in the 3 years, but I don't think he's earned the right to not to be absolved of all wrongdoing. So I like this as the middle ground between firing and him, doubling down or whatever, and them sticking with what Nick wants to do and what they did last year. So
Yeah, I would say the Kellen Moore hire, and quickly we'll mention the other addition that we know of the Eagles offensive coaching staff, and that's their new quarterback coach. So Alex Taney, he has moved on, and the Eagles are bringing in Doug Nussmeier to be their new quarterback coach. His two most recent stops were the Dallas Cowboys as a quarterbacks coach from 20 to 22. So obviously, some overlap with Kellen Moore with the Cowboys, and then again he followed him to LA with the Chargers as their quarterback coach. So I think the Eagles have a big priority to get Jalen Hurts back into his MVP type shape in 2023. I think the hiring of those two, obviously they'll have big handed, and I'm encouraged. I would say, at least from what we know, between those two hires, I would say like the Eagles, I think you got to feel at least like a B plus as far as the plan. Obviously that could be quite different than the ultimate execution and outcome, but for what they can control, I thought this was a pretty good outcome.
Yeah.
And then, no big surprise, the Eagles officially announced their defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, at our last recording. It was basically the news dropped during the Eagles press conference that it was like all but official. So now it is official, and there has been way more announcements and news developments on the Eagles' defensive coaching staff, and it looks like Vic Fangio's fingerprints are all over it, and I think that is a pretty good thing. It really does seem like they're giving him the Jim Schwartz treatment of like, all right, this is completely your jurisdiction here. Do what you see fit. Bring in your guys. Don't feel like you need to carry over past staff. So Vic's first hire, or at least the first publicly reported hiring, was the Eagles' new defensive line coach, Clint Hurt. He was the big guy in those pictures. Really seemed to be like a mythical like mountain of a man. He will be replacing Tracy Rocker, but Clint Hurt, he was the Seahawks defensive coordinator the past 2 years with not good results, but he's been with Fangio at different stops, most recently with the Seahawks, but I think he was also with him when Fangio was the head coach with the Bears, I believe. Then a few other ones. Like, I'll just mention these real quick because it's pretty much the only time we'll ever mention them. But defensive back coach Christian Parker, he was the same position or same coach with the Broncos the past 3 years. Linebacker coach Bobby King, most recently with the Titans as the same coach position. And then the safeties coach, which the Eagles haven't had under Nick Sirianni, so this is an added coaching job. That's Joe Casper, who most recently held the same title with the Dolphins. So Vic Fangio bringing kind of his new coaches from various spots around the league. He's pulled from the Dolphins staff most recently, but also some guys from the Broncos, some guys from his tenure with the Bears. So ultimately, it's unfortunate that the Eagles will have some turnover. You never want to see coaches lose their job, but I do think it makes me feel good that Vic Fangio is kind of he's given the pen and paper to draw the blueprint for this defense. Now, I hope the Eagles will give him the resources and the power to make changes personnel-wise, because it would really stink to give him all of this leeway just for his coaching staff. Like, I think you if you're gonna toss him the keys to the defense, I think you gotta give him reasonable resources to make that happen, beyond the staff. I think, I'm sure he and Howie have already had tons of conversations about the Eagles' upcoming free agents, their draft plans. So it'll be interesting to see how this defense comes together. I think we'll start getting some clues to that with free agency coming up and then the draft thereafter. But I'm excited. The defensive, after the end of this past season, I think, like, I just kind of wanted to see anything but what we've seen. And that kind of dovetails into the newest news, which is the Hassan Reddick trade rumor. So, what was your reaction to that? That came out yesterday, I'm pretty sure. Yesterday morning.
Yeah, I was pretty discouraged by it. I don't really know how the playing contract stuff out in the public works out. I feel like it doesn't happen that often with the Eagles, and I'm sure it has. I just what
happened with Darius Slay last year?
Right. But that he wasn't as.
I don't think it's the same.
But they weren't as important pieces. I think. I mean, they ended up being important, but
yeah, I would say it's probably different in that Reddick has more leverage than Slay or Cox had. Like he's still in a good bargaining position.
Yeah, he's missed like one game, I think, and he's had double digit sacks every year with the. It's just it would be really hard if to swallow that if he leaves. I'm sure they would get a really good package in return, but he's probably earned another, you know, like 3-year deal. I mean, he's 29, so mm-hmm. he's not, I mean, 30 to 33, I'm sure the first 2 years of that will still be productive. Josh Sweat also on the final year of his deal, it feels like they're choosing him over Reddick in this scenario, but it's a.
What makes you say that?
Maybe he'll be cheaper.
Well,
maybe he'll be cheaper.
What gives you the sense they're picking one over the other at this point? This is like an agent at work. I don't think this is the Eagles publicly notifying league sources that Hassan Reddick can go find a deal. I think that this is an agent who has got word from his client or has gotten to a point or an impasse where he's like, all right, like, we would like to move these conversations forward. May we request a trade to move this along? Like, I don't think that this, like, this to me is not in any way the Eagles picking or choosing.
I just think it implies that they're far apart on an extension, or they're not interested on an extension. So,
well, I'm sure they're interested in an extension. I think it is a stage of negotiations. Now, you could say maybe it's a point of negotiation where you feel comfortable parting ways if the compensation is fair in your eyes. I think there's, like, once you've gotten to this point, you're willing to move on once you go public with the granting permission to seek a trade. Now, I don't think that means the train has left the station on an extension. I think I could very easily see them come to terms. To me, this is like, yeah, let's see what teams would be willing to trade for you, and also on agreement of that, like what they would consider paying you. Like, it's kind of like, all right, go see what you can get, and once you have an offer in hand, maybe we'll think twice and maybe we'll up our offer. Like, I think it's, to me, it reads more like that.
Yeah. Than
Hassan Reddick, I think you have.
Oh, okay. I understand that. So it's like you can seek a trade and gauge what your value is now, or you can wait and we'll see how the market develops with,
yeah,
you know, you can risk waiting and seeing how the market develops, or you could try to see what you are worth now and then we can negotiate there. So from that perspective, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think it's just, you know, working together for each other's best interests, but
yeah, I think it's
interesting with the Josh Sweat of it all. But
I wouldn't classify it as like no big deal. Like, I do think, like I said, once you've gotten to this point, you are in Daryl Morey's parlance, you're comfortable with getting uncomfortable. Now, I don't think it's as combative as the James Harden situation. Like, I think it's far from that. I don't think there's much animosity I would file this under. Like, it's just business. Like, Hassan Reddick has outperformed his contract, and so, like, that's, I think that's fair and good from his side. And the Eagles signed Hassan Reddick to a 3-year contract, and he has yet to fulfill that third year of his contract, and I think that's also fair to hold him to that. But I don't think we see Hassan Reddick playing on this third year contract, on the third year of his contract, without an extension. So I think if there's anything that has, like, if there has been a train that left the station, I don't think Reddick is playing with the Eagles under the third year of his contract without an extension. I think he could do that on a new team. I don't see that happening with the Eagles. And as far as Josh Sweat, like, it's that, like, that's certainly part of the calculus here. Like, who would you value more given their age and their production, or, you know, your forecast of their production, like, over the next, like, 3 years?
How old is Josh Sweat?
I think he's, like, 26, and I think Reddick's probably 26, 30. Yeah.
Reddick's 29.
29, so. I believe. I think it's close. I don't think there's a wrong answer here, but I do think if you were to straight up trade one of them, I do think you would probably get more for Reddick than you would Sweat. But I don't think, like, all NFL teams would be on one side or the other. I do think the majority of teams would probably value Reddick more, because at that position, like, the age difference isn't that big between them. Like, 4 years at like running back, that's a big difference. 4 years at edge rusher, and the older player's 30 or 29 heading towards 30, like, I don't think that's crazy. Like, because, you know, edge rushers, like, you're probably, like, looking at a 3 or 4 year deal. I don't think anybody would be nervous to give Reddick a commitment that far into the future. So I'd lean Reddick, but maybe somebody sees Sweat differently.
Hopefully we'll have some news before our next podcast, but any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. The Sixers are a sad state at the moment. Obviously with the Joel Embiid meniscus injury. I really hope he has a quick and full recovery for obvious reasons. I am excited to see how, like, Buddy Hield fits into this team. Right now they're kind of, like, in a weird spot that, like, they could be really good if Joel Embiid comes back and is healthy and doesn't have any restrictions going into the playoffs. I feel like we've been saying that every year for the past 5 years, though. The team could really come together, or they could kind of just, like, fade to black. And it's kind of a precarious spot right now for the team. What's your outlook on that situation?
Let's hope for the sixth seed and hope Joel comes back, and we'll see what we're working with. But in the meantime, I won't hold my breath, and I will be watching the Flyers. So I'll check back in. I mean, I keep tabs on the Sixers, but I won't be following them intimately until either Joel comes back or the playoffs start. And I am seeing them play the Clippers next month. But other than that, fully on the Flyers right now until 2 days from now when it's pitchers and catchers. And yeah, we'll be back on the Phillies.
Bring on spring training.
All right.
Spencer Turnbull.
We'll be back at... yeah, Turnbull, yeah. We are now firmly entered into the off season, which is good news because now the Eagles are officially back in first place. We'll be back at some point when there's news. It's the off season, so we'll be more intermittent, I would think, until we get into draft prep. So a lot of exciting stuff coming up. For Mike, I'm Ian. Thanks for listening.